This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing.
The title of the book, Grace as a Silent Voice, and the author, Dr. Nina M. Kelly, and Nina joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, and this interview is brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Nina.
Hello, how are you?
Great to have you with us, and great stories to give us, well, to lift our spirits. I guess that would be the best way to describe your book, right?
Thank you.
Yes, so let me read just a couple sentences that you have written that kind of sums up your book. You say, this is a book about the resilience of the human soul in the worst times of tragedy. These are authentic stories of individuals who have become heroic at the most challenging times of their life. Well, we all need motivation, inspiration, so thank you.
Thank you.
So how did this come about? Why don't you first tell us a little bit about your background and then how the book came about?
The book came about through life experiences. As I said, if you live long enough, you have many experiences in life. Some you wish to move forward with, others you would like to shelve somewhere. But several of the stories in this book came through my years as working as a practical nurse in the field of organ donation, transplantation. I was a procurement coordinator. And at the most tragic moments of life, people have to make a decision whether to offer their loved ones vascular organs. And several of the stories in the book have to do with that because you just see that during those moments of tragedy, they are in a position where they want to give back to humanity, to give someone else an opportunity to live. That's one aspect of it. Another aspect is there is a story of who I think is a wonderful hero in my book, and it has to do with Mr. Scott, who was homeless and who became his own entrepreneur. And he's such a hero to me, and we're friends. And then the other has to do with music and how it personally has touched my life and informed me at a time when I didn't even know what it was informing me. The other portion of I'm kind of backing back and forth. I was a nurse, but I also have been a cultural activist in my community, so I'm strongly connected with the arts, and I really believe that the arts, in many forms or fashion, are healing, and I've had many experiences with that.
So these seven stories, these short stories in your book, Grace Has a Silent Voice, you're personally involved. You were part of what was happening.
Yes, sir.
So you know the emotional ride.
I certainly do.
So these are formed, these chapters are formed in letters.
Yes.
Why do it that way?
Well, I'm an old-fashioned person. I still write letters. I still write thank you notes. It's just one of those things I've done since I was a little child. I've always written, and I probably will do it forever. And so it was easy for me. I was actually having a conversation with my friend Carol, who is the person that I'm writing letters to. And through so many stories through our friendship, she said, why don't you just write these? And so that's how the book came about. I just started writing letters to Carol.
Well, let's talk about a couple of aspects of your book. You've already mentioned Mr. Scott. Why don't you give us a little bit more details about Mr. Scott, just to give people an understanding of the kind of story that is in your book?
Well, Mr. Scott, I met Mr. Scott. I was privileged to be able to be the president and CEO of the Children's Bureau, which is the second oldest agency in the country, in the United States. And I was walking to work one day, and there's this man sitting on the side of the road. And I passed him, I don't know, several days, and finally one day I said to him, "What's your name?" And he told me his name, and then I asked him what he did, and he said, "Well, I'm homeless." And then from there, I asked him if he wanted to wash my car, and that began our relationship. And so from Mr. Scott, from that, all of a sudden, he took his bucket, and he started cleaning the car, and the next thing you know, he has several cars, and then I lost contact with him post-Katrina. And several years later, I saw him, and I said, "Oh, Mr. Scott, you've made it." And he laughed, and he said, "Well, I'm homeless. I know how to survive." And so, see, that's, I look at him, and the thing I love about Mr. Scott is that his resilience, his the twinkle in his eyes, the hope that there's always something better tomorrow. He never quit. And now, this man is no longer homeless. Man has his own apartment, he has his own car, and that was the beginning of my friendship with Mr. Scott.
You got personally involved in someone else's life,
he was the first, he washed my car.
Well, I was going to say, pretty much by accident, we see those people, and a lot of people just drive on by. Often, people are asking for work, or they need to work for food, or they looking for a donation, but you, something within you said, find out about this man.
Well, he was just sitting on the street corner, and that's the way I walk to work every day. And I just looked at him, and I just said, "What is your name?" And that was the beginning of our relationship. So I think it was the spark in Mr. Scott. He had a spark about him.
Right. So that interaction and your reaching out to him, we often don't realize the difference we can make in someone else's life.
That's true.
The power of music. You've already mentioned about your dedication to the arts. What is the power of music and the story in your book or stories in your book?
In this particular story, it's a very personal story, and it's a story about, and I don't want to tell the story, I really want the readers to read this one. It's a story about when I was at a concert, I was so moved by the music that at intermission, I kept saying, "I've got to get a paper and pen. I need a paper and pen." So at intermission, I went up and I purchased a little small tablet and a pen. And then when the concert hall lights went off again, I started writing and writing and never knowing exactly what I was writing because you can't see, but there was something that moved me. I'm also a mythologist, so, it's interesting because I say, well, the muse was there. And I put that tablet aside, and it wasn't until years later that my daughter picked it up and read it. And when she read it, she goes, "Mom, you might want to reread this." And the story within that story is quite profound.
Well, as you put it, life often reveals itself in ways we would not choose. Yet in those devastating times, the resilience of the human spirit has the opportunity to shine. So you have stories about the resilience as well of the human spirit with people who are going through but somewhat, say, a tragedy.
That's correct. And in every one of these stories, I've worked so many years with life and death, and that is how life is for me. Life is death, and death is life, and it happens all the time. And so in these stories, there were tragic stories, but from that tragedy came something beautiful, and the people in my life gave me the opportunity to witness their resilience, their grace, their sincerity of wanting to give back to humanity.
And I think probably no better way to show that than to donate one of your own organs to someone else.
That is correct. Especially at the moment when you're not even, it's almost within minutes I should say, but you're notified that you have just lost the person that means the most to you in your life. And how can you even conceive of thinking of another person? And yet over and over and over again, that's what happens. They step beyond themselves and they go, well, maybe we can make sense of this by helping someone else to live. That's beautiful. Those are the heroes.
Those are the heroes, the silent heroes. They're all around us. We most of the time don't even know who they are.
That's correct. That's correct. There's a little girl, and in my book, there's a little girl right now. Well, she's probably not so little anymore, but she's alive today and doesn't even know what was, you know, the gift that was given. Or she knows the gift, but I mean, how in a moment's time a young person lost their life, and now she's alive and can go on. These are incredible stories.
Yes, stories of the human spirit, true life stories, stories that you were involved with personally. We've been talking to Dr. Nina M. Kelly and her book, Grace Has a Silent Voice. I read, in the face of adversity, each of us are given an opportunity to give to our fellow humans, and these such stories of strangers helping other unknown people with the greatest gifts of all gifts. And that is life, life itself.
Yes.
Any concluding thoughts, Nina?
No, I thank you for this opportunity to share and the opportunity to bring back into life these stories that happen, and also to remember the people on some way that maybe you're not speaking to them on a daily basis, but you're not forgetting them. And you're honoring them for the moment that they stepped up into your life or even to the lives of others that they don't even know. I thank you for that.
What's the best way to get your book, Grace Has a Silent Voice?
Through Balboa Press. You can go online through Balboa Press and order my book.
Thank you for joining us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you, and I really appreciate it. Take care.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Balboa Press.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Congratulations on being the proud owner of an adorable, soft, cuddly, sweet-smelling, smiling, cooing, hungry, tired, gassy, screaming little bundle of joy. So now what? Where's the owner's manual for this thing? Where are my instructions? Right here. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on TogiNet.com. Infant care specialist Blythe Lipman has worked with babies for over 20 years and works extensively with new parents, providing workshops, in-home visits, tips, and daily phone calls to ease those frazzled nerves. With Baby and Toddler Instructions, you can get the advice you need on how to survive and enjoy your baby's first year. For more information on Blythe and how she can help you, go to babyinstructions.com. From 32 ways to stop a baby from crying to 14 ways to get a baby to eat and so much more. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled The Wisdom of Life. Book 1. Have you ever wondered what the real truth is? Have you ever wondered who you really are? The Wisdom of Life answers these questions simply and clearly. Our author, Helen Wicker, joins me from near Denver, Colorado. Welcome to the program this morning.
Thank you very much. I don't know if that was for me.
It was, well, yes. Yes.
Okay.
Welcome, Helen, to the program.
Okay, thank you.
Your book is a relatively short read. You've described it as most of the chapters being covered in one or two pages. It's not something that, at least from what you've described, is very complicated. Wisdom is. How did you come about to write this book, and what inspired you to do research and do some discovery on wisdom and life?
Well, Jay, I was a student of let me start over.
Sure.
I wrote the book because I was searching for the truth beyond what I'd learned from traditional Christianity, which mainly taught me how to act, but not necessarily how to think. And I experienced a lot of death in my life as a young woman. My parents both died at different times. My husband died. And I started reading a lot of books wondering about death. And I never could really get an answer as to what that was. So one day I just sat down and I said, okay, I am so tired of going to all these workshops and reading all these books. I want to know the truth. What is the truth? I want it to be simple, and I want to be able to understand it. Just give me the truth. And immediately, I just heard this really soft, quiet voice in my head, and I wrote down what I heard. And this continued every time I sat down and asked for more. So that's how it started. That's how this book started being written.
And the voice itself, you talk about a quiet voice. Some people relate that to spiritual insight. Was that something that you would describe it as an insightful thought that came to your mind?
Very much so. Yeah, the book is about waking up to the truth of who we really are. And, you know, we give so much attention to the importance of our body and our career and accomplishments, but we're really missing the very basic, most important thing, and that's what's going on inside of us, this wellspring of information within us. And that's what I learned from this voice, is that all this information was inside of me, and it was just amazing to me, because I would read it after I wrote it, and I would go, really? I mean, I did not know this information. It wasn't coming from my conscious mind. So there is more underneath, and that's what it is trying to do, is to help you to go there and to give you kind of a clear road as to how to get there, answering very simple questions very easily. You can read one chapter, which is usually one page, maybe two pages, in just a few minutes, and then go to sleep.
One of the chapters I think is titled "Love and Service." Did that title come to you as a by itself, or is this something that you have discovered from reading other writers?
Oh no, none of this came from the conscious me. They gave me the title. They gave me all the words. Of course, they had to work through my brain, you know,
right.
But which is very limited. If someone that was extremely intellectual, it was an English professor, had gotten all this, it would sound a little different.
Sure.
It had come through me.
You said they began to write through you. Are you saying that this was not a conscious effort, but a subconscious effort?
Right. It was very subconscious. I was kind of in I could get up and answer the phone if I needed to, or I was very aware of what was going on around me, but I was very focused on this energy that was coming through me and speaking on the page. You know, my hand would just fly across the page, and I would not be aware of what it was saying. I tried not to read it at the time.
What was the editing that was done later that maybe fine-tuned some of the thoughts?
Very little. I tried to keep it as pure as possible as it did come through. And, you know, the information that came through is very simple. It's topics like wellness, how to stay well, creativity. It was a lot about death, death of the body. There is no real death is what it came through as. It's about prosperity, it's about greed, awareness, all the things that we've been wondering, how to make wise choices, how to create wellness within yourself and to love yourself. And probably the main topic that I got from it, and is what most comes through, is it goes back to about loving yourself. And this is a very difficult thing that we totally ignore. You know, we get very uncomfortable with that idea, and we think it's narcissistic to love ourselves. But when you really know who you are, not the physical human being walking around on the planet, but the creation of the Creator, you know that to extend the love that you've been given is the highest purpose you can possibly have. And that's really all it's about, that love, letting that love flow forth, feeling it from the Creator, and then letting it flow forth. It's kind of hard to say.
Yeah.
And once you get that and just experience it once, just let yourself do it once for just a few minutes, there is nothing in the world that feels better. Absolutely nothing.
Would you describe your book as motivational in nature, or would you maybe put it in the category of a spiritual awakening book?
I would say it's more of an awakening, but you have to do it. You can't just read it. You know, so many spiritual books you just read and go, well, that's nice. But you have to put this into, like anything, you have to put some effort behind it. But it's very little effort. It's mainly just changing your mind about how you've been thinking. If you think, you change your thoughts, you change your mind. You know, we've heard that.
Sure.
And then your world changes, and you don't even have to change it. Your world starts changing if your mind changes. If you start to love yourself, forgive everybody around you, and not just rotely. I mean, you know, you're going down the street, and you're having a little bit of road rage going on or whatever, and you catch yourself. And you realize, hey, this does not make me feel very good. If it doesn't feel good, then it's probably not the way to act. And so you change it. You realize the guy's probably had a horrible day today, and you forgive him. It's gone. Mm-hmm. It's done. It's over. And your world will change because of that one little act, and he will feel it. He will feel it.
I will read for my listeners a couple of the titles of the chapters, and that'll give them a little bit of an idea and insight into how you have approached this. Chapter 1 is called The Life Force. On page 3, State of Grace, you talk about creativity, the past. You talk about human desires versus soul desires, faith, fear, love of self, truth and harmony, humbleness and love. And so it goes. The chapters, again, are short and sort of to the point. How long did it take, Helen, to complete your book?
Years.
Wow.
Yes, I had a business, and I, you know, I just did this for myself. I never planned on publishing it or sharing it with anyone else. I just thought it was information for me. And so I just, you know, when I could feel this coming through me, I would just pick up a pen and start writing it. And it's always, you know, after I'd meditated or early in the morning before my life had started for that day. That very first chapter, the life force, that was the first thing that came through, and I was pretty shocked about all that. I had no idea about it, and so that was probably my impetus to keep going. And each time I would write, I would think, well, I wonder what else there is that I don't know about. And so I just kept writing. And now I've written 3 books. 2 have been published. The second one just came out. So there's a lot more information. It just keeps coming. I thought I was through, but obviously I'm not. The Creator just keeps creating.
And who do you think will find this book interesting? Is this designed for people who are in traditional approaches to faith, or how would you describe your book?
Well, I've been very surprised. After I published it, I thought it would be just the metaphysical group that would be interested in it. But I've been very surprised because I've had a lot of my relatives are very traditional. One's even was a pastor at one time, and one is close to being an atheist, and it just cried and said, "This is." Explained so much to me, and you're not pushing God down my throat. You know, it said, and it's not me. I'm saying I wrote it down, but I have not had one person say anything negative about it. If they don't like it, they haven't told me. But so many people, I have a clothing store in Denver, and people have come into the store and said that I never would have thought, ever would have gotten anything out of it or have even bought it. And they'll say, it just has helped me so much to understand, because it's very simple. It's very simple to understand. The truth is very simple.
So something for everyone.
I think it is. I've been shocked at how many different kinds of people have responded to it. And, you know, some people have just read it and put it down and said, well, that's nice. I have it, but they have it still on their table beside their bed, and sometimes they go back to it and pick it up. Some people just open it up anywhere that it opens, and they say, this answered exactly what I needed today.
Hmm.
So it's a very tiny book. Both of them are very tiny. And it's best if you don't just sit down and read the whole book.
Maybe a chapter at a time.
Yes. That seems to be the best way to do it. Just one, and just kind of live with it that day. Let it sink into you. Don't be in any hurry. Let the profound nature of it work on you during the day. Because once you open to the truth, you can't go back. There's no way you can go back to that old way of thinking. You are on a path, and your world will start to change.
You've included, I won't call them sketches, but diagrams such as triangles and stars and those kinds of things. Where did those come from?
Those were all inspired. It seemed like it helped to understand it better, and I just would get that image in my mind to draw a triangle. But it is very easy to understand. It's not difficult.
Well, it's a fascinating idea. This, again, could be described as a motivational book for people who need to get cheered up and maybe find a better way of thinking about themselves. The title of the book, again, is The Wisdom of Life, Book 1. Author Helen Wicker has joined me from the Denver, Colorado area. Where can we get copies of your book, Helen?
Well, the book is published by Balboa Press, and you can order it from them. Or you can order it from me if you want a signed copy. You can call my store in Denver, Colorado, and the number's 303-321-7992, and we'll be glad to send you a copy of it.
Helen, do you think your book has any value to contemporary issues that are happening in our culture today?
I really do. These are little books. They're so simple and easy to understand. And you'll find you're starting to make different choices about how you see yourself in the world. And this is very important. The world will not change until we do. It's time for a shift in the consciousness of our being to a new level of being. And this is happening whether you go with it or not. It's much easier if you decide to get on the bandwagon. The truth will not only set you free, it feels good. And it works. When it's applied, it's easily available in this book.
Well, thank you, Helen, for joining me today. This, again, is the first in a series, the way it's sounding. There's at least one more in the works, maybe two. So we'll be hearing from you and talking to you in the future about the wisdom of life and other elements of growing and loving ourselves better.
Thank you so much, Jay. Appreciate it.
Thank you for joining me today. For Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press, this is Jay Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Helen Wu was born and raised in San Francisco's Chinatown, and after a very difficult upbringing, fighting depression, abuse, and addictions, she finally finds herself genuinely happy inside and out. Helen believes in taking our positive thinking and doing something positive to achieve a positive outcome. She's here to make a positive difference in your life, to be your game changer, your aha moment mentor. She's ready to help both men and women get into a better place. Helen Wu is also the author of Self-Aid Success Stories, 25 Success Stories from Successful Entrepreneurs. Inspired by Ellen DeGeneres, Helen wants the world to know that just because we find ourselves in a difficult situation doesn't mean we have to stay there. We can aid ourselves to a better life. So join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Westbow Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled A Piece of Peace. Peace is spelled P-I-E-C-E, of P-E-A-C-E. And joining me from Arizona is author Adeline Mocha. Addie, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jay. Appreciate it. My pleasure.
Pleasure to visit with you. You have written a book of 64 pages. It's not long in length. There must have been something that urged you to write this, because it is, by general standards, a motivational book. How would you describe it?
Yes, a motivational, inspirational type book. I have many more coming, which will be somewhat of a series, which is why I keep it short. Basically, another reason why I keep it short is because what I have to say is what I have to say, and there's no reason to keep expounding and dragging it on. So when you read the book, you'll understand why I say what I have to say in a short period of time.
Addie, what was the reason behind your wanting to share your ideas and thoughts?
Actually, this book has been being written for many, many years. Through my life, as I owned a restaurant for 17 years and on a college campus and worked with a lot of college students and all the other things I've done in my life, I made notes of issues, everyday issues people were having all the time, and how these small everyday issues affected them terribly in their life. And I thought, boy, it's just one little tweak here or there. You don't have to have all these problems and issues. And I would start writing this down. And after years and years of doing this, one day I looked over and I went, because I love to write, and I said, oh my gosh, this is my book. So that is how the book came to be. But like I said, I have many more coming.
It's done in short sprints would be one way to describe it. They're not long chapters. You have maybe 17 or 18 chapters in the 64 pages. You've got chapters such as, with titles, A Watched Pot Never Boils, A Rushing to the Red Light, which I found intriguing, and What Comes Around Goes Around, Looking in the Mirror, Glass is Half Full, Half Empty, You Reap What You Sow, things that people are familiar with, at least some in the lexicon of language. But you have have approached this almost like a conversational discussion between two friends. Would that be the way to describe your style?
That's a great way to describe it. Great way. Basically, all these things in these chapters that you have named are everyday type of things we all go through. And in having these conversations with people, this is exactly what I did. I wrote down and I asked a lot of questions. So as you're reading the chapter, I ask you a question so you can sit there and contemplate a little bit about, yeah, I guess I do that. Maybe I could change the way I do that, and so on. And yet I have touched on subjects that honestly and truly are all of us all the time, every day. Nothing unusual, nothing out of the ordinary. These are things that happen to all of us.
Was it difficult for you to put it in a sort of a conversational style, one sentence back and forth in your mind with the reader?
No, actually, that came quite easy to me, because I probably should have been a therapist. I tend to have a lot of people come to me with issues, and so I end up doing a lot of conversation, listening, advising back and forth. I tend to do that a lot. So for me to be able to just pen it and put it down was actually quite easy for me. And that's the way my mind works. It's like when I'm thinking of something that I'm going to approach in a subject, I actually think of it in a way like I'm talking to someone and what they're going to say to me. So it was actually quite easy for me to write like that.
You've taken also scriptural references as part of the way you've described and dealt with some of the issues in the book. Is that something that's important to you and important for the reader to get a hold of?
Very much so. I would like people, as they read this, to understand that this is the basis of everything anyway. And this doesn't have to be a religious lecture or anything like that, but there is a basis, a biblical reference, a way we should live to all these things that I am bringing out in the book, all these little annoyances, everyday irritants. There is scriptural reference to them all. So I put just a little one sentence or two sentence reference in it, but I want them to understand that this is coming from a place of reference through the Bible. This is not just somebody's opinion. This is an actual fact that it works, and this is the way we need to look at it.
And would you say, because of your approach, being conversational and reflective at the same time, that this is a book that would appeal to a broad range of readers.
Yes, I totally feel that this would approach, because for one thing, it's an easy read. And what I have had people coming to me who have read the book is they go back and they reread it and reread it and reread it, because as you read the book and think, yeah, that happens to me, I could look at that. 2 weeks later, something else happens. Now, what was the chapter on that? I could read that again, and so on. So they go back and reread it. I know for a fact, and people have told me, this is for everyone. There is no way, no matter what age, gender, anything, that you haven't come across something in this book and some way for it to help you, or some way you can look at it differently. So, yes, this is for a wide range.
You have already disclosed to the audience this first book took nearly 20 years. You have also given the impression that there may be more books to follow. How many 20-year spans are you going to allot for your series? Or is that a fair question?
Actually, Jay, what I did was I would like keep writing more and more and more as I went along. So I cut this book when I did, and I actually have more on right now. I could probably publish about 4 or 5 more right now with what I have. So I'm taking it a little at a time. But I would say within the next couple of years, there will be at least 3 or 4 more coming on.
Incredible. Have you always desired to be a motivational writer or a writer of things people would read?
Well, let's just say this. I have always been a motivational friend, and I've always been like a motivational boss or sister or someone like that. And writing was something I have done all my life. I actually started as a teenager writing, and I had poems published and worked with poetry a lot. But then I found that what I had to say was not as poetic as it just was factual. And so I kind of combined the two and realized, oh, my gosh, you know, as people are talking to me and as I'm being motivational to people, I'm going to write that because I don't need to turn this into a poem. I need to turn this into a conversation. I need to take that conversation we're having and put it down in writing, because how many other people I don't know in this world could be having the same conversation with me?
And you've done a great job. As I mentioned earlier in our interview, this approach that you've used is like talking to a friend.
Correct. And again, it's simple, it's basic, but it's what we all do. And when we have these conversations with friends, relatives, siblings, whoever we're close to and we can confide in or we can ask questions to, we don't think about writing them down. As I told you, I didn't for a long time. And then I realized everybody has these. Everybody needs these. We need to remember them. We need to go back and reference them. We need to, because things will repeat itself over and over. How many times somebody has come to me and 2 years later, it's the same story. So we need to write this down so we can go reference it. And I find it's very comfortable, and the word simple, again, is to have it in a conversation, because then the reader feels like they're part of the book, of what I'm trying to say. They're part of me and what I'm writing. It's not that I'm writing to them. We're discussing this.
Yes, and you are very approachable because of that direction you've taken in your writing. As you begin to write this, and as you begin to go back, maybe do some editing and look at what you had accomplished, was there an underlying theme or a concept or a foundation that just kept reoccurring in one capacity or another?
You know, there really was. And I guess to sum it up in one word, I'd have to say accountability. I think the thing that I have found as the basis for all this that the book is about and all the continual writing I'm doing, conversations I'm having, and so on, is basically about accountability. I think we all need to realize that we have an accountability to the Lord, to each other, to what we do every day, and so on. And this is in all little forms of life and what you do. This isn't one great big thing I'm talking about. This is every day and what you do. And I see when I talk to people and when they come to me, more and more and more, I feel like there's a lack of that today. And in this world today, there's a lack of that. It's like people want to try to push that off and put it on someone else or, you know, backdoor it. And they're not happy. So, again, the word peace, to find peace, happiness. Happiness seems to be more fleeting. Peace is a much better foundational word. Mm. We need to hold ourselves accountable, which is an easy thing. It's a very easy thing. And if you read my book, you will see how each thing that I describe is a very easy thing to do. Just hold yourself accountable for these everyday things, and you just end up happier, more joyful, more peaceful. It just happens. And why not? Why not have those
Why
things?
Not? Why not? Good advice indeed. Now, I interview authors from around the globe. Many of them have motivational books. Yours is, from my perspective, a little bit different. From your perspective, what do you think makes your book unique in the marketplace?
Well, again, this is what a motivational speaker, first of all, has to be a person that people will magnet to, very approachable and so on. But they have something to say. They, whether it be advice, whether it be something that they've experienced and what they got out of it, they have something to say. Motivational part is they're trying to motivate these people to read the book, to understand what they're saying, to take the advice and so on. To me, a motivation is nothing more than a care and concern one-on-one to be a good listener to this person, just a person. And when you listen to them, and then you can figure out in that person, how can I help them in my response? That's how you're motivated. You can motivate just by listening to someone. So for me, it's not so much that I'm going to be out there presenting a topic and motivate people. I want to be able to motivate them to think about it themselves, to have this conversation while I'm listening, and then they can figure it out all by themselves just by asking themselves those questions. The motivation for how to solve the issue will come from them.
What you've described is perhaps lifestyle change or spiritual change inside.
Correct, exactly. And again, a lifestyle and a motivational change, a lot of times people see that as something large or overwhelming. And what I'm trying to say is no, I'm talking about today. An incident today. That chapter you mentioned, rushing to the red light, how many times have we done it or seen somebody do it?
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm trying to say is, you know, that type of thing, just on your daily life, why did you create that little bit of stress that may affect your day? Why did you do that? A little thing. So a lifestyle change, or how you think about a situation that you're in today can change you for life. But it's little things. It's not something huge. You can do it.
Addie, thank you for sharing your story in the background of this particular book, this particular effort. The title, again, is A Piece of Peace. The first piece is spelled P-I-E-C-E. The second one, P-E-A-C-E. My author, Adeline Mocha. Addie, where can my listeners get a copy of your book?
Well, they can either go to my website, adelinemocha.com, Westbow Press, Amazon, or Barnes & Noble.
And Mocha is spelled M-O-C-C-A, correct?
Correct. That's correct.
And they can keep in touch with you by doing a search under your name and also by keeping in contact through this book, A Piece of Peace. Thank you for joining me today and sharing your story.
Thank you so much, Jay, for having me on. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Honored to visit with you, and hope to visit with you in the near future, or maybe within 20 years, and the next one is released. Thank you again for joining me.
Absolutely.
For Indie Book Publishing, Westbow Press, this is Jay Douglas Barker.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern, as Steve interviews another great author.